Welcome to the Group Radio podcast. This week's Bible teaching edition is all to do with the matter of what happens when you desperately need God to show up, for Jesus to come along and sort something out for you now, and he doesn't seem to. So you hear people say, it's a life and death issue, right? It's always worth asking, is it? Is it? Because very often when Jesus is about, it isn't. Not when Jesus is about, it isn't. When Jesus is about, and he's always about, if you've the eyes of faith rather than the eyes of insecurity, and we have a little look at some of the people who are viewing Jesus with the eyes of insecurity right at the very end. When Jesus is about, what the average ordinary person might see as a life or death issue is actually very often a glory of God issue. It's not a life or death issue. It's a glory of God issue here. And that can really take a bit of getting used to, a good bit of getting used to, as a believer, let alone as not. See, John gives this, Jesus and John, I suppose, give a very good illustration of that in the emotional roller coaster of John chapter 11, because it is a total emotional roller coaster, and it looks like Jesus is the one who pushes them off the top of the ride. You've got to sort of stop at the beginning of John 8 and say, what's just happened? If you go into John chapter 8, Jesus is the light of the world, and then that's illustrated in John 9 with the blind man who gets his sight back and suddenly he can see in the daylight again. And then John 9's the Pharisees are blind guides sort of lesson is illustrated by contrast with Jesus the good shepherd in John chapter 10. And it's John chapter 10 verse 11 and John chapter 10 verses 17 to 18 which speak about Jesus. They get illustrated and elaborated in John chapter 11 where Lazarus comes out of his grave. So what are those verses in John 10 about that I just mentioned? John 10, 11. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And John 10, 17 and 18. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. And John 11 is all about resurrection. No one takes it from me. I lay it down of my own accord. I have the authority to lay it down. And I have the authority to take it up again. And that is the controlling understanding that gets spelled out and illustrated in John chapter 11. Jesus is all about living, not for life and death issues as we see them, in this world, but living for resurrection and life. And for him, following him in that way actually changes everything. And a view of life and death issues. Because very often they're going to be glory of God issues. And poor old Mary and Martha, and I guess Lazarus as well. I don't know about Lazarus' experience of this, but certainly for Mary and Martha, you know, they're devoted disciples, and my sympathy goes right to them. Goes right to them. Verses 1 to 7. Mary had already, you know, demonstrated her outright devotion to Jesus. My sympathy is with Martha and Mary. My sympathy is with Lazarus. He appears to have a life and death issue going on. And from our perspective, he really needs Jesus to step in here because they send for Jesus when he's really not very well. He needs Jesus to step in. And we have times like that, don't we, when we really need Jesus to step in now. But will you look at, just look at what Jesus does, or rather doesn't do, in that situation where Lazarus really needs him to step in now. The sisters send for Jesus. And verses 4 to 7, when he heard this, Jesus said, this illness will not end in death, no, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. That's the first thing. This is a glory of God issue. And the second thing is, Jesus loved Martha and his sister and Lazarus. Martha, Mary and Lazarus. I don't know why it says her sister, because Mary is the one who isn't named there for some strange reason. You're left thinking, hang on, who's Mary? Mary is the one who washed Jesus' feet with her hair. That's the second thing. Jesus loved them. So when he heard that Jesus was ill, here's the third thing, he stayed where he was 2 more days. This sounds simply insane. And then he said to his disciples, the fourth thing, let's go back to Judea. And they thought that was completely insane, because the people there were trying to kill Jesus. That's the sort of response, to say it's insane, that Jesus got from the religious leaders in John 10. They didn't get it. They didn't understand it. And so often, when we are up against something we're not grasping or understanding, we think it's insane. But here's the big clue, the great big clue to how Jesus responds throughout this life and death incident. Verse 4. When he heard this, Jesus said, "This illness will not end in death. It is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." And that's the principle that underlies all his actions. You've just got to lay tight hold of that. And then there's this other governing principle, verse 5, that you've got to lay hold of when Jesus doesn't act on our idea of life and death issues, but on the resurrection and life view of the kingdom of God, the glory of God basis. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, and he still stayed behind. He loved them all the time. Mm-hmm. That's the difficult one to get hold of, isn't it? Jesus loved Martha and her sister, Mary the hare, and Lazarus. He loved them. So here's the incredible bit. He deliberately delayed so that Lazarus died. Can you believe it? It's because the governing principle is not going to be Lazarus, Mary and Martha's, this life and death issues, but God's glory, which is their actual life and death issue, and safeguards their eternal destiny, the glory of God. It's where we're going. Now, can the disciples live like Jesus on that? Because following him means living like that. Can they live like that? Jesus is just about to challenge them on whether they can live for the glory of God rather than life and death issues, because he's now going to say, verse 7, let's go back to Judea. Let's go back to Judea. The challenge is to act like the grace of God in the gospel and the glory of God in heaven and on earth is the big issue. Can you see that? It's immensely disruptive. It's immensely challenging. Jesus is calling on his disciples to think more of the glory of God, of resurrection life, than their life and death issues in their situation. And they're going to tussle with that in verses 8 to 16. So verses 1 to 7, resurrection life in a needy situation. Immensely challenging. Then secondly, verses 8 to 16, resurrection life as the governing principle of our thinking in a dangerous situation. Verses 8 to 16. They seem to be doing the right thing, but for all the wrong reasons in the end. Verse 8, but Rabbi, they said, a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back. And are they thinking of Jesus? Maybe. Maybe. Dangerous back there. And Jesus chats and talks, and then Thomas, verse 16, known as Didymus the doubter, said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. He's great, I love him. I know a lot of people like him. Very close, very close. They seem to be doing the right thing, but for all the wrong reasons. And they go with Jesus because they are by now desperate men with nothing left in life but this Jesus. So they throw in their lot to live or die with Jesus, but they do so desperately. Life or death, not resurrection life, the glory of God wholeheartedly. And Jesus takes them on with him to learn of resurrection life and its impact on life and death. He takes them on to learn of it in a grievous situation. And that's verses 17 to 37. Resurrection life in a resurrection life in a needy situation, verses 1 to 7. Resurrection life in a dangerous situation, verses 8 to 16. Resurrection life in a grievous situation, verses 17 to 37. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. It's a grievous situation, and our life takes us into grievous situations. I drove back along the Tally Road one day later on in the day this week after there'd been an accident. with a lorry that had left the road and had rolled numerous times down a very steep bank to the bottom. And we know at least one person was cut out of there, and we know it wasn't great, and the air ambulance and everything else was in attendance. And when I came back up the tally road at the end of the day, there appeared to be a family that had arrived at the scene. And there appeared to be the men of a family there with a camera. And somebody parked inside the coned off area with a car, stayed in the car. And somebody was out with the camera, and there was a teenager, I don't know. I'm putting all this together in my own from my own observation, but I guess it was a teenager standing there looking lost in the world and not knowing what to do. And there was somebody who'd found the focus for his activity in a camera, and there was somebody else who was standing just looking. I don't know, I'm imagining the family had come out. The men of the family had come to the scene. And were taking photos of this grievous event. Somebody certainly was seriously ill as a result. It's a grievous situation. We can view grievous situations as a life and death issue or a resurrection life issue. And bear in mind, I'm imagining what I was seeing there. I could be completely wrong. But we all go through our own, and this is the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to make the observation that we all go through our grievous situations. And what dominates in a grievous situation? Is it resurrection life, or this is a life and death issue? Jesus deliberately delayed when it was a life and death issue. And now Lazarus seemed to be, in that climate and culture at least, way beyond the point of no return. He's been in the grave 4 days. The authorized version is tremendous at this point. It says, Jesus says, take the stone away. And they say, we can't take the stone away, for lo, he stinketh. Right? Brilliant. Puts the point so beautifully, graphically. If you take a life and death perspective on this situation rather than a resurrection life perspective, trusting Christ for his view of it, wow. The people he is living among saw death, and they knew that this was now past the point of no return in their experience, in their perspective on the situation. But knowing that, Jesus speaks to Martha. Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Now this is fascinating, because at this point Martha comes back with a spiritual correctness sort of answer. Now you know about political correctness, don't you? There are things we're supposed to say, there are things we're supposed to express, right? This is a spiritual correctness. Giving the right answer, but keeping the reality and the God in your face, God in your life thing that we call living faith, as far as possible at arm's length. Spiritual correctness. Verse 24. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day, because I've been to Sunday school. And Jesus is saying that's not good enough. What he does is he responds in the present tense to start with. I am the resurrection and the life. And then secondly, he shifts to the future implication of the present reality. I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And then he generalizes it to everybody. It's not just particular to Lazarus. Whoever lives by believing in me will never die. So he's brought that right home, hasn't he? The current situation is that I'm the resurrection and the life. The future situation is that the one who believes in me, even though they die, will live. Whoever, it's not particular to Lazarus, it's general to all of us. Let's bring it home to you, Martha. Whoever lives by believing in me will never die. And then Jesus brings it right home. In this grievous situation, Martha, can you do resurrection life? Do you believe this? Do you believe it? Yes, she can. Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. And what she's saying, the Messiah was to come to bring universal salvation for everybody by his death on the cross, by his resurrection to life. One and all, individually, do you believe it? Yes, I do. Yep. That's great, Martha. Resurrection life in a grievous situation is one thing. But Martha, can you carry that view of the world with you into the graveyard? Jesus goes with them into the graveyard, and there's Mary. And when Mary reached the place where Jesus was, verse 32, and saw him, she fell at his feet. Mary, mind, washed his feet with her hair. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Is that faith? I don't know. It's a bit of a backhander, isn't it? If you'd been here. Don't know. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews had come along with her also weeping, there in the graveyard, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? Come and see. Jesus wept. Why? Because he sees what not taking a resurrection life perspective is doing to them. It's breaking their heart. He sees what sin in the world does. The wages of sin is death, and it breaks his heart to see it because it's breaking their hearts. And he weeps for them. And the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them still said, it's a life and death issue. Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Can you carry that resurrection life perspective into the graveyard and up to the door of the tomb? Mary's seeing things from a life and death perspective, and so are the people in verse 37. And Jesus sees that, and he sees the desperateness of that, the desperation of it all. There's the disaster of what sin does. But he's going to bring resurrection and life to bear on it, and he's going to do it by demonstrating his power over life and death. Here is resurrection life in a graveyard, verses 38 to 44. See, there's a set of challenges thrown at the faith of Martha in that graveyard. Let's be clear what Jesus is doing in all of this. He walks into a graveyard. He walks into a place of death. He walks into a place of the ultimate illustration of human impotence. We can do nothing about it. It's a life and death issue. We can do nothing. He's dead. He's gone. Knowing that he's there for the glory of God. I grew up in a culture, to a large extent we still live in a culture, where the graveyard and the funeral and all the rest of it is a place for attempts to clutch at human glory. So you go to a funeral and there's an elegy, what a wonderful person this person was, and some people are in the back scratching their head thinking, well, don't recognise the guy in that. Yeah? They're saying nice things about people at the front and they're dead, and in life, maybe, different story. And we live in a culture where there are fancy graveyards, where, you know, the size of your tombstone and all the rest of it. Calabi came with us into a certain church a little while ago of an evening, and he said, what sort of church is that? You've got to walk through all these dead people to get there. And there were these big tombs, and there were all these sort of memorials to show how wonderful a person this person was and how important and significant. Jesus is in the place where, above any other place, the lie is completely given to human glory. It's the place of human inability, failure. Following Jesus entails being in the graveyard for God's glory. And there are many strange and unusual things in this account to ordinary human ears, not least among them, that Jesus goes into that place of disappointment and death on that day, knowing the truth he'd already laid out in chapter 11, verse 4. When he heard this, Jesus said, this illness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Now is crunch time. He's there for God's glory. Right. So let's see it. Even Martha's faith rebels at verse 39, take away the stone. Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odour. Terrible, terrible, sanitised translation. For it's been there for 4 days in a hot climate. And Jesus said, "Did I not tell you, if you believe, you'll see the glory of God?" She needs reminding. Don't we all? So they took away the stone. Faith. They trusted him to go to the effort and take the risk of rolling away the stone. And Jesus explicitly demonstrates that this is all about the glory of God. And Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you, you've heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." He's acting for the glory of God. And when he said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And out he came. Now see this? How much we need Jesus to give the order for us that he gives literally there for Lazarus. Because as people, even people who believe and are trying to live for the resurrection and the life and the glory of God, how much we need Jesus to give this next order that he gives for Lazarus. What does he say next? "Dead man came out, hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and cloth around his face, and Jesus said to them, 'Take off the grave clothes and let him go.'" Because we're still bound up with the grave clothes. Wrapped tight, couldn't move, wasn't free. And at the end of it all, where does this resurrection life, as opposed to life and death living, get us? Take off the grave clothes, let him go. Living free. Living free. And we've got to keep grabbing hold of that again. Because life and death keeps creeping back at us. Where does it get Lazarus? Oh, great, free. Let's go have some dinner. Yeah, great. Where does it get Jesus? It gets Jesus straight away into a murderous situation, verses 45 to 57. Resurrection life in a needy situation, verses 1 to 7. Resurrection life in a dangerous situation, verses 8 to 16. Resurrection life in a grievous, grieving situation, verses 17 to 37. Resurrection life in the graveyard, verses 38 to 44, takes it on. And resurrection life in a murderous situation for Jesus is what happens next. Because verse 45, "Therefore many of the Jews who'd come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done." And verse 53, "From that day on they plotted to take his life." Now we know that's going to be utterly futile, don't we? Because he is the resurrection and he is the life. And, you know, he's done a pretty good job of just indicating the fact. But he's challenging his people to live like he is the resurrection and the life. Live on that basis, not life and death. They're going to do their powerfully human best to put him in a life and death murderous situation. Because his life and teaching, about this in particular, it seems, make them feel terribly insecure. And for Jesus, it's going to feel terrible. My God, why have you forsaken me?" And for Jesus, it's going to be ghastly and look utterly hopeless. And for his followers, it's going to look the same too, just as it looked the same that day in the graveyard with Lazarus for 3 days. But then it will become absolutely glory of God dawning brightly stuff. Jesus lived resurrection and life. In needy situations, in dangerous situations, in grievous situations, in a graveyard up against complete human impotence, when his delay had made it look as bad as it looked. In a murderous situation that threatened his own life for living that way. And the point of our calling to follow Jesus is that we see things his way in this world. And then it'll be a lot easier to see them that way in glory. Unwrap him. Set him free. This has been the Group Radio Podcast. If we can be of any help to you with any of the issues raised in this edition, please get in touch with us using the website, www.groupradio.com. YGRWP.com. That's YGRWP.com. You'll find a contact form there. Thanks very much for listening.